Have you ever been cruising at flight level 350 on a 16-hour leg and wondered what exactly is happening up front behind that curtain? I'm Tower and this is ATIS on Radio Hangar. Today we're stepping out of the cockpit for a few minutes to talk about something every pilot who flies commercially has thought about. The difference between first class and business class on the longest flights in the world. And honestly, the answer is getting harder to pin down. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. So here's what got me thinking about this. Simple Flying just published a breakdown of what actually separates first class from business class on ultra long haul routes. We're talking flights like Singapore to New York, Dubai to Auckland, Doha to Los Angeles. Anything north of 14, 15 hours in a tube, and the conclusion they reach lines up with what a lot of frequent flyers have been saying for years now. The line between the two cabins is blurring fast. Let me back up and give you some context. 20 years ago, the distinction was obvious. Business class meant an angled flat seat. First class meant a fully flat bed, real silverware, maybe a little privacy screen. The gap was enormous. You were paying 2 to 3 times more for first class, and you could feel every dollar of that difference. Today, business class on most major long-haul carriers gives you a fully flat bed, a door that closes, noise-canceling headphones, a multi-course meal with wine pairings. That used to be first-class territory exclusively. Airlines like Qatar Airways, Singapore Airlines, Cathay Pacific, and Emirates have pushed their business class products so far upmarket that a passenger sitting in a modern business class suite might genuinely struggle to articulate what more they would want. So what does first class still offer that business class doesn't? Here's what you need to know. Space is the most obvious one. First class suites on the longest flights are genuinely enormous. Singapore Airlines first class suites on the Airbus A380, before they retired that configuration on some routes, offered a separate bed and a separate seat, not a seat that converts into a bed. Two distinct pieces of furniture, Qatar Airways, Q Suites, and Business Class are impressive, but the first class cabin still gives you roughly 40 to 50% more square footage per passenger. Then there's the service ratio. In first class on a long haul wide body, you might have one flight attendant for every 2 or 3 passengers. In business class, that ratio drops to 1 for every 6 or 8. On a 16-hour flight, that difference compounds. It means your glass gets refilled before you notice it's empty. It means the crew learns your preferences early and remembers them for the duration. Dining is another separator, though it's narrowing fast. First class meals on carriers like ANA or All Nippon Airways are genuinely restaurant quality. We're talking multi-course kaiseki meals with presentation that would hold up at a high-end Tokyo establishment. Business class dining has improved dramatically, but the ingredients, the plating, the flexibility to eat whenever you want rather than on a service schedule, that still tilts toward first class. And then there's the ground experience, which honestly might be the biggest practical difference on an ultra-long-haul trip. First-class passengers on Emirates get a private terminal at Dubai International, separate check-in, separate lounge with full spa services, a chauffeur-driven transfer to the aircraft door. Singapore Airlines' private room at Changi is similar. The journey starts before you board, and that matters when you're about to spend 17 hours in the air. But here's the thing. And this is where it gets interesting for those of us who think about the airline industry. Several major carriers have eliminated first class entirely. Delta got rid of their international first class cabin years ago. They went all in on Delta One, their premium business class product, and called it a day. United has done similar things with Polaris. Their bet is that demand has shifted. Corporate travel budgets don't support first class fares the way they used to, and leisure travelers who might splurge on business class draw the line at paying $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 more for a marginally better experience. The airlines that still fly first class tend to be Middle Eastern and Asian carriers where the brand positioning matters. Emirates, Singapore Airlines, Cathay Pacific, ANA. For them, first class is a billboard. It's aspirational marketing as much as it is a revenue cabin. When Singapore Airlines launches a new suite, it generates press coverage that no advertising budget could buy. The ultra-long-haul element adds another wrinkle. On a 4-hour transcon, the difference between business and first is minimal. You eat one meal, maybe watch half a movie, and you're there. But stretch that to 15 or 18 hours, and every incremental comfort multiplier adds up. Better noise isolation matters more. A bigger bed matters more. More attentive service matters more. The ultra-long-haul flight is actually the one scenario where first class still justifies a significant premium, at least from a comfort standpoint. There's an operational angle here, too. Airlines configuring aircraft for ultra-long-haul routes face a real math problem. every first class suite takes up the footprint of 3 to 4 economy seats. On a route like Perth to London, which Qantas operates with a Boeing 787 Dreamliner, they opted for no first class at all. Business class and premium economy do the heavy lifting. The airplane's range capability limits passenger count, so every square foot of cabin has to earn its keep. First class is a hard sell when you can fit more revenue-generating business class seats in the same space. For those of us who fly general aviation and watch the airline world from a slight distance, there's a useful parallel here. It's the same trade-off we make when we're configuring our own aircraft. Do you put the heavy leather interior in the Cherokee, or do you save the weight and spend on avionics? Do you take the useful load hit for comfort, or do you optimize for capability? Airlines are making that same calculus at a massive scale. The bottom line from the simple flying analysis is this. If you're flying ultra long haul and debating between business and first class, the honest answer in 2026 is that business class gets you 90% of the way there for roughly half the price. First class still exists for the traveler who wants that last 10% and is willing to pay handsomely for it. But that last 10% is shrinking every year as business class products improve. Whether first class survives on ultra long haul routes long term is an open question. The economics push against it. But as long as carriers like Emirates and Singapore Airlines see it as a brand differentiator, it'll stick around. Just don't be surprised if your next business class seat has a closing door and a bed that would have been first class a decade ago. That story and more detail available over at Simple Flying. I'm Tower. This has been ATIS on Radio Hangar. Catch the full show and more at radiohangar.com. Fly safe out there.